Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Go. Welcome back, poetry lovers. This is the fourth episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer, and today I am joined by the poet Sarah Hanlon. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Some of you may know Sarah on Instagram, aka Sarah_Kelly_poetry. As with each guest speaker, her information will be in the description box of this episode so you can check out her latest work. As always, we will start with an interview of Sarah, then go on to discuss our designated Insta poet of the episode, this time being Cleo Wade. So, are you ready, Sarah?
Yep, I'm ready.
Wonderful. So from our correspondence, I noticed that your email was kent.edu. So I'm inferring from that that you are a student at the University of Kent.
Actually, I'm a past student. I graduated in 2018, but this is just the email that I've just kept this email active and I use it regularly.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, no, I'm the same way where after I graduated, my grad school email became like my personal email as well. So, but were you, so what did you study in Kent?
Well, actually, I graduated high school in 2011 and I attended Kent State my first time. I've been there twice. I received an associate's degree in physical therapist assisting. And then I took a break for a year, and then I started attending once again to receive my bachelor's. And my bachelor's is actually in public health, and I have a concentration in health services administration.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, that's great. I was just curious. So you went to school in Kent, but are you originally from there, or are you from elsewhere in the UK?
Well, actually, Kent is in Ohio.
Oh my god, that's so embarrassing.
No, you're fine. It's a pretty common mistake, actually, that I don't think many, Kent, Ohio isn't a very popular place, but I actually live in I'm from East Liverpool, Ohio, and East Liverpool, Ohio, it's actually, at one time, it was considered the pottery capital of the United States. So it has a really rich history, and a lot of my poetry that's been published actually stems from that general area geographically. I write a lot about nature, but right now I live in Columbiana, Ohio, which is, it's a little north of East Liverpool and it's a little south of Kent, so I'm kind of somewhere in the middle of there.
I'm really close by. I'm in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, no, the place you described, like just being known for all its pottery, makes me think of this one place in Indiana, Nashville, Indiana, where there are the, it's like a little artisans, like, colony originally, and they have all these cute shops with all sorts of arts and crafts, not just pottery, but all sorts of things, and it's just really cute and quaint. It makes me think of that.
I kind of wish that East Liverpool was still cute and quaint, because now, you know, we've had major highways built, and the city itself has kind of fallen apart.
Okay. One moment. Let me just get something.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're fine.
Okay. So, out of curiosity, this, of course, very general question that I ask of all my contributors, what got you into poetry?
Well, I started actually writing poetry when I was in middle school. And from there, my high school years, I was pretty busy with a lot of things. So I kind of took a break from it then. And I wrote a little bit in college. And actually, into adulthood, it wasn't until, I would say, it's probably been, I think it was in 2018, I started writing again at the beginning of 2018. And I actually started on an app called MiraKey. Mm-hmm. And I believe MiraKey is actually an app that's based out of India. A lot of the contributors on MiraKey are, you know, they're from India. A lot of them are of Asian descent. But I don't even really know how I thought to go onto Instagram, but one day I decided, you know, I want to reach a wider audience. And so I made a personal poetry account, and from there, that's what I've done since.
And the rest is history.
Yep.
Oh, wonderful. So how would you describe your poetry style?
I use a lot of free verse. I appreciate imagery. I like to be able to paint a picture, and I really like giving inanimate objects human traits, if that makes sense. Yeah. But like I noticed, I was actually, when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to read for you today, I was going back and looking through a lot of my stuff, and I do have a tendency to give a lot of inanimate objects hands.
Yeah, wonderful. In fact, that makes me think of, you know, I found you via the Insta Poet Anthology, and one my favorite poem that you contributed to that anthology was a little poem called Candle.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yes. Once she was a steady burn and a pretty please, nothing more than a whisper in a world full of screams. She found that a flickering candle was all she would need to be. All alone, she had been afraid of the dark, needlessly.
Oh, yeah, that one is one of my favorites. I love that one. One of the things about that poem was when I shared it on Instagram, I actually... the background photo for that I took in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, which if you've never been there, it's a very quaint little place. It has a lot of history. And my husband and I went on a ghost tour there, and it was really dark, but it was so beautiful. And that's what actually made me, that gave me the inspiration for that poem.
Ooh, a bit of a spookiness. I like it.
Yeah.
If you ever take a peek at my website and like my poetry collections, you'll see that definitely my stuff has a bit of a pagan gothic edge to it.
Yeah, I actually, today I listened to, it was the first episode of your Sublimely Gothic podcast.
Yes, that's the first one was what?
It was Jane Eyre. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of get a feel for what you did, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. And if you're an Austen fan, you can also check out, I just started doing the Jane Austen novels with my sister. So the first episode, Sense and Sensibility, is now up.
I am an Austen fan, so I probably will check that out. But
okay, wonderful. Alrighty then. So following question, do you want each poem to stand out on its own, or are you trying to build a body of work with connections between each poem?
I think that I would like each individual piece to stand out on its own, because when I first started, many of my themes were based on nature. But I've been working on my first full-length book. And with that, I'm getting away from those themes more, and I am leaning more into darker things, you could say. So I think that I would want things to be based more individually rather than lumped all together, I guess you could say.
Okay, wonderful. And what would you say is your writing kryptonite?
Well, certainly writer's block, but...
Does writer's block exist to you? Because there are some famous writers who will say that it doesn't exist and that's just an excuse.
Oh, it certainly exists to me. I've actually been going through a spell right now where I'm trying to get this book in order, and I just, everything that I have goes toward that creatively. And so I haven't really had much to give to my Instagram platform lately. And it is causing me writer's block, because I know what I'm feeling on the inside I need to put forth. And I can't seem to find the words.
Yeah, that's something I struggle with as well, trying to find a balance of, you know, I hopefully will publish 2 poetry collections by the end of this year, and just trying to balance, you know, obviously I don't want to share those poems on Instagram, you know, yet until after the book is published. So that means like I'm devoting all my energy to those and not really, like, literally in the last few months, my Instagram went from like an Insta poet Instagram page to like more of a bookstagram page instead.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just when you're putting all your energy towards something like that, you want it to be the best that you can make it. So it's hard to focus on other things whenever that's weighing on your mind.
Of course, of course. Do you show your works in progress to anyone?
Well, it's usually my husband that does my proofreading for me. He's not afraid to tell me if he thinks something sucks.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
So he's like that one person I have in my life that is going to be honest with me and not just tell me what he thinks I want to hear. So that's pretty important.
Yeah, that's good. You have your husband to rely on for things like that, because definitely that is a challenge, especially amongst our friends and family.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, in your opinion, does the internet and does social media contribute to the well-being of poetry?
Yes, I would say that it does. I think that it has kind of reshaped our idea of what poetry can be. Mm-hmm. I know there are a lot of people who, I don't want to say snobbish about it.
Oh, I call them snobbish. This is what this whole podcast is.
Well, okay. We'll call it snobbish then. I think that your art is what you make it, and who am I to judge, you know, what these words that are important to you? That's just my take on it. I think that the internet and Instagram and Tumblr and all of these other apps and sites are good for artists and poets and everybody. Yeah, go ahead, you're good.
No, go ahead and finish.
I just think it's good for artists in general and creators, and it's good for promotion too.
Of course, yeah. No, I've gone on the record of saying, like in other episodes of the podcast, that, you know, poetry can be good or bad, but whether it's good or bad is not necessarily a correlation or a reflection on the use of technology for the promotion of said work.
Yes, exactly. I agree 100%.
Alrighty then. So, for you, how important is accessibility of meaning? Should one have to work hard to quote-unquote solve the poem?
I mean, I guess that's pretty subjective, I guess. To me, I don't try to overinterpret things too much. Because I know that the way that a person wrote it, it means something to them. But I try not to. Like when I write something, I know that the way I write it and the way I mean for it to be interpreted probably won't be the way that it is viewed by people. So I try not to push that idea too much whenever I'm reading other people's work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I kind of go all over the place. Like, mine can range from being super simplistic to being, like, super cryptic, and sometimes I'll make allusions to, like, Greek mythology or other things that maybe I know not everyone will understand immediately, but I'm just like, you know, whatever, I get it, and that's okay.
Yeah, I have a tendency to be pretty cryptic, but I find it to be more interesting that way for people to try and, I mean, they can interpret it however they like.
Yeah. One thing, is that the chair you're sitting in that's creaking?
Yeah, I think it is. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, if you could just, you know, I can hear it a little bit, so. So, alrighty then. So, what is your favorite who is your favorite underappreciated poet, or what is your favorite underappreciated poetry collection or book?
My favorite underappreciated poet on Instagram is probably Anne Sparrow.
Anne Sparrow. I think I know her. I think I actually invited her on the show as well, but I think, you know, she was just very shy and just podcasts weren't her thing. But yeah, I do know who you're talking about, and she is a wonderful poet.
Oh my goodness, I love her work. I actually just pulled some of it up. I pulled Instagram up just now, and I'm actually looking at some of it. And like I said, imagery is something that I really appreciate when it comes to poetry. Right. And that is something that she is excellent at.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what her, I remember her specific page. Yeah, Anne Sparrow. Oh yeah, not just the imagery of the poetry, but the way she shoots her poems with like the rainbows and like,
yeah.
It's so whimsical and I love it.
It's beautiful. Her page is beautiful.
I know. Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much. Would you like to read for us the poems that you chose?
Sure. Let me see here. Sorry, I'm pulling my Instagram up again.
That's fine. Again, I'll edit out all the empty space.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so this first one, I titled it December Personified. A sing-song warmth falling upon ears that welcome the softness of it all. I envision the resolute look on a face that has beheld pain but also joy. Okay, that was the first one.
Oh, you know, that's cute. I don't know, it just makes me think of like snow falling and like candles on Christmas trees.
This one was for a challenge, but I can't remember exactly what the challenge was. That's one of the things that I really like about being on Instagram too, is a lot of the pages that you follow, they give you like the daily word challenges and...
Oh, like poetry prompts?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it gives a lot of inspiration.
Alrighty. What about the next poem?
Okay. So this one is called Breathing Technique. She spent every day of her life with a fire inside that consumed lungs, starving. Wanting nothing more than to be the sweetness of the smolder, she was tired of always holding her breath.
Ooh, like, yeah. I like giving life to inanimate objects. Okay. Alrighty, and then the final poem?
The final one is called Ivy.
Ooh.
A winding ivy heart covers the floor of this chest cavity with a coating of peace. It reaches out with tendril fingertips, daring cold flakes to fly and storms to rage. She is grounded. Watch her cling to it. She is ready to prove how strong she really is.
Nice. Makes me think of like a ship in a storm.
Yeah, that's... I love the word tendril. I know that probably sounds silly, but I love that word.
Tendril, that kind of makes me feel like a tentacle, like the Kraken coming out of the ocean.
Yes, exactly. It's just, it's a word that's alive.
Yeah, no, it just makes me specifically think of like a shipwreck because I'm reading a very specific YA like novel where one of the big pivotal scenes is this huge shipwreck. And, you know, that's just what's coming to mind right now. Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for reciting those poems to us. And now we are going to move on to the designated Insta-poet of the episode, which is Cleo Wade. And I'm just curious, you know, I gave all my contributors a whole list of famous Insta-poets and, you know, let them choose which poet that they wanted to cover with me. So I wanted to ask you, Sarah, why did you specifically choose Cleo Wade?
I chose Cleo Wade because I am pretty intrigued with her work outside of poetry as well as her work within the realm of poetry. Mm-hmm. She just seems like she's an overall good person. Mm-hmm. From what I can tell.
She's pretty strong in the activist community, particularly when it comes to racial equality, if I understand correctly, right?
Oh yeah, she's very active. Let me see. I have the information here. There's a whole list of things that she's done.
I'll read the little paragraph that I was able to get from her website, and that'll definitely probably list a few things.
Okay.
Cleo Wade is a friend, community builder, and author of the books Heart Talk, Poetic Wisdom for a Better Life, and Where to Begin, a small book, Your Power to Create Big Change. She has been called the poet of her generation by Time magazine and one of the 100 most creative people in business by Fast Company. Cleo sits on the board of the Lower East Side Girls Club, the National Black Theater in Harlem, the Women's Prison Association. When Cleo is not at home in California with her partner, Simon Kingsford, and their daughter, Memphis, she can be found traveling around the country on her sold-out book tours, which have become a safe space to laugh, cry, hug, and offer support to fellow readers. So yeah, so it seems she's invested in a lot of issues, not just specifically racial issues, but you know, prison reform, maybe things like that. And yeah, she's doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, with election time coming up too, by looking at her Instagram page, it seems as though she does a lot of work in politics, it seems, too.
Right.
It looks like she's made, she's doing work for the Biden Victory Fund. It looks like she's made shirts.
Oh.
There's, the one that I'm looking at right now, it's a t-shirt, and it has a picture of a young Kamala Harris on it. And, her artwork has a very specific type of font. Like the artwork that's used in her murals, and I got the book Heart Talk, and it's strewn throughout this book, but it says the first but not the last, and I believe that that the proceeds to this shirt go to the Biden Victory Fund.
Oh, I see.
And then it looks like she's also making merchandise. And the proceeds to that goes to Fair Fight Action. So Fair Fight Action, it says, their bio page says, fighting for free and fair elections. Mm. So it seems as though she does a lot of, she's very up on politics, it seems, I guess I should say.
Of course. I think a lot of people are that maybe didn't used to because they are desperate for a different outcome this election.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Okay. Alrighty then. So politics aside, let us move on to her poetry. We'll see if any of the poems I chose are particularly politically charged. So I regrettably do not have a copy of any of her books. So I was just going on her Instagram and her and just online to get a few of her poems.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna be perfectly honest, like going through and selecting some poems. She is not, as terms, again, she's brilliant in what she's doing for, like, you know, the community and her political activism. But in regards to her poetry, just the little bit of I saw, she is not one of my favorites, I gotta say. So hopefully that'll be an interesting debate that we can have.
Well, actually, since you're mentioning it, like I said, I got the book Heart Talk. And, you know, the Heart Talk, it's more of like a self-help book rather than exclusively a poetry book. And I got it and I was like, you know, everybody can use a little self-help every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to admit, I only made it about a fourth of the way through it.
Oh.
So the way that this book is set up, she goes over different aspects of self-love and self-worth. So
right.
You'll get a little blurb from her explaining, you know, basically about how you need to love yourself. And mm-hmm. then in between each of these little blurbs, you'll get a page with her artwork on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get a poem.
Okay.
And the poems are usually one page. They're pretty short, to the point, but I'm interested to see what you've picked out.
Yeah, again, because I didn't have the book, so I was just kind of going random of what was available online. So here's one that's called, I don't know if it's which book it's from, but "Keep Shooting for the Moon. This may look like a crash and burn, but it is just gravity in its beauty, asking us to touch down, asking us to feel the earth we come from before we reach for the stars again."
I'm trying to think of what I want to say about that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the poems that had a little bit more imagery that I actually liked.
Yeah.
You know, because, and I'm just, I'm like you, I'm a sucker for nature, for, you know, the moon and the flowers and metaphors regards to that, you know, I'm pretty easy to please in that regard, but yeah, so you don't have to say anything really about it. You can move on. Why don't you read one of the poems that you picked?
Okay, so this one is from the book Heart Talk, and it is entitled All of It. Which parts of yourself won't you let yourself love yet? Befriend your ingredients. The spicy, the sweet, the pain, the heartache, the gifts, the shame, and the shine. Fall in love with all of you. Savor yourself.
Yes, that is also one of the poems that I picked as well.
Is it really?
It is, yeah. I think it's one of her more famous ones, which I can get why. And again, I didn't like it as much as the Shooting for the Moon one because, again, if you're going for a really cliche message, then I want the... It's not even like has to be super complicated or anything like that, but just a little bit more imaginative imagery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard. Again, writing is completely subjective. You know, probably the way I feel about Cleo Wade is probably the way a lot of people feel about Rupi Kaur. But I like Rupi Kaur much more than I like Cleo Wade. So yeah, again, so people do simple differently, and sometimes it speaks to certain people and sometimes not.
Yes, I agree with you completely. One thing about this one I will say that I kind of appreciate a little bit is she tells you to befriend your ingredients, okay? And then she lists off her ingredients almost like she's like, I don't know, baking a cake or, you know, making cookies or whatever you want it to be that she's making. And then at the end she says to savor yourself. So I appreciate the fact that she brought it full circle, but I agree with you in the way that simplicity doesn't always do it for me.
Yeah, no, and one thing I will give this poem as well, to give it some credit, is it's showing that it's not just the good things, it's not just focusing on the good things that make us who we are. It is a combination of the positive and the negative that shapes our identities and makes us who we are as people.
Yes, that's a good way to look at it.
Okay, so let me see. This one is also from Heart Talk, I can see. So this one's called Where to Find It. Kept looking for goodness, kept asking everyone where I could find the good in the world. It was not until I looked within and grew my own goodness that I began to see it everywhere. So I like the concept. Again, it's an age-old cliche, but one I really like about, you know, once you, like, you know, half of, you know, perception is reality. So if you just can change your perception or certain interpretations of things, and if you can see the world a little more positively, then usually positive things will come your way.
Yeah.
So I like that overall message, but again, there was nothing in it you know, in terms of fancy imagery. And also, specifically with this poem, like, I'm, you know, a lot of people like to hammer Insta-poets for the way they break up lines and, you know, like, what criteria are they using to create certain stanzas? Like, why does "and" only have, is all by itself? I'm usually, when it comes to other poets like Rupi Kaur, I usually don't nitpick that too much. But for with her, sometimes, like, again, I don't like the way she did it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of, like, one word to a line either. I mean, when I'm writing, I try to break it up in a way that I'm reading it in my head, if that makes sense. And sometimes I'm just not sure, like, what people are exactly, like, how are they reading this in their head?
Right. Or if it is one word, then I want it to be like super emphasis, like darkness, chaos, despair, like some sort of word like that to emphasize whatever, not and.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Alrighty then, would you like to share another poem of hers, please?
Okay, sure. This one is called Choose to Shine. What is within us appears before us. When I think like a cactus too long, I am all of a sudden a cactus. I am in the desert, I am without water, and not even the one I love can touch me. So I think like the sun instead, and nourish the growth of all with my light and with my warmth. So this one
that's my favorite one so far, because it has an interesting image that I like.
Well, yeah, you got the cactus, and you got the desert and the sunshine, and it has a good message overall. Like you said, the setup with this one, I had a hard time reading it aloud because of the way it was kind of broken up here, but like can is one line, and that I felt like could have been added to the top line, like the line above it, but
mm-hmm.
And another thing that I've noticed as I'm looking at this is another one thing, and Ruby Carr does this too, is no capitalization and no punctuation.
Right.
And that, when you're reading that aloud, that also kind of trips you up a little bit.
Yeah. Although I am more forgiving of it in Ruby Kaur, because, you know, with Ruby Kaur, you know, she has gone on to say that it's an extension of, you know, her influence from, like, I don't know which Indian language of her heritage, but that there is no, like, punctuation marks in the same way that there is in English. And as me being a huge linguistic nerd and studying bilingualism and how languages mix up and, you know, influence one another, I'm like, okay, I can get behind that. But does Cleo Wade have that excuse? No.
No, she certainly does not.
Okay. Yeah, but again, even though the language itself was simple, I felt the imagery was different and, you know, complicated again with the cactus and the desert. Which, so I can get behind that.
And honestly, one of the reasons I chose this one was because it was one of the longer pieces in this book. Like, the rest of them don't seem to be as lengthy as that. And that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I chose it, is because I felt as though I needed to pick one where it was a longer read.
Right. Alrighty then. So now I'm going to move on to a poem called Stand Tall. The tree never feels less like a tree because it is different from the others in the forest. So why would we ever think we are meant to be all the same? To be unique is to be a living thing.
What's funny about that is that was my next one I was going to read.
great minds think alike.
But, I mean, another thing, I hate to be a negative Nancy, but another thing that kind of bothers me sometimes is redundancy. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like personally using the same word twice in a row.
Yeah.
And
like, unless it's serving a very specific rhetorical purpose, you know, I'm the same way, both in poetry and then with like my prose, like writing like novels or short stories, like I will like have my thesaurus out. Like, I will hate to use if like certain words shows up like too close together. I'm gonna just be like, no, no, no.
Yeah, that's one thing, because I'm sitting here looking at it as you read it, and that's one thing that kind of stands out to me with that one. Good message, though. I mean, mm-hmm. a really nice, positive message.
Yeah, because indefinitely in just in this, you know, it was always part of the human condition, just trying to be like one's peers and trying to fit in, and you know, definitely I feel like that's been amplified by social media and whatnot, and it's okay to be different sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as you get older, that's something that you start to embrace more anyway. So I feel mm-hmm. like this book in general, maybe her work as a whole, would be appreciated greatly by somebody who is maybe like in their late teenage years, early college years.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's like trying to figure out who they are.
That coming of age period.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's definitely one. It's kind of a misogynistic thing of why people attack Insta-poetry. I've probably discussed this with other contributors as well. Just the idea that Insta-poetry is attacked just a lot of the times just by the nature of who likes it, which is tends to be young women, and us as a society likes to disparage and condemn anything that teenage girls like.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you got to think, you've really got to, when your work is on Instagram, people are scrolling. They're not really stopping to really look at anything unless it's a video. And right. So you have to pack a big punch quickly and it can't be too wordy. But I mean, there are so many things you can do with words.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, so thank you for sharing those poems with me. Again, we were very like-minded in the poems that we chose. Yeah. Alrighty, so I'm going to first read I copy-pasted a one-star review comment from Heart Talk.
Okay.
So let's see here. What did this person have to say? If you need life wisdom from a 25-year-old Instagram influencer and you're buying this book to find it, then you have bigger things to worry about. Do yourself a favor and support real writers. This book was a word soup of incomprehensible nonsense. I hope the author takes a long look at this work and asks herself if this is something she is truly proud of. The other reviewer who mentioned this is light on material also hit the nail on the head. So, yeah, even though I'm not the biggest fan of Cleo Wade, I would not go out of my way to write something like that. I like to review someone. And again, if you need life wisdom from a 25-year-old Instagram influencer and you're buying this book, then you have bigger things to worry about. Like, that, again, that's really, like, petty.
That's kind of mean.
Yeah, that's really mean. And again, it makes me think of, you know, disparaging, you know, the younger generation, especially women, and this disparaging of the use of technology.
I mean, when you buy a self-help book, what are you expecting, really? I mean, it's going to be things, it's got to be positive, and it's got to be easy to read. And I mean, when I picked this up, I knew that it was going to be telling me things that I already knew. But I mean, you have to appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, like, this seems like someone who, like, was demanding that it be something else, or, like, I don't specifically like this sort of fluffy thing, so how dare it be in existence?
Well, yeah, because obviously somebody out there does like it a lot, because
a lot of people like it.
Yeah. I mean, for goodness sakes, she's called the Millennial Oprah.
Yeah, no, I read that, and I'm just like, really? Wow.
Yeah, I found that very interesting, too.
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with, like, her activism and maybe things like that. Because certainly she has them, of all the poets that I've covered so far, she's got the most going on outside the realm of poetry.
Well, I think the New York Times called her, well, the poet of her generation.
I thought that went to Rupi Kaur.
Let me double check.
Well, I'm sure other many people have given that label to a variety of the poets, but
probably.
Yeah, but yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was really nasty and mean-spirited. And even if you don't like it, you don't have to be bitchy about it that way.
Yeah.
So here is a little bit of I pulled this up from, it was from AmericanMagazine.org, from the Arts and Culture section. So this was an article about discussing a variety of poets, and one of them was Cleo Wade, so I'm going to read an excerpt from that. So what does she say? The kind of encouraging, earnest writing found in Heart Talk is common in the Instagram poetry world. These words of comfort provide a break in the pretending-to-be-perfect echo chamber of most social media. While millennials have been stereotyped in popular culture as snowflakes and are sometimes labeled as emotionally fragile, many of Instagram's poems actually show a willingness to confront emotions positively and productively. Still, the poetry left me wanting more details and images. For instance, in Where to Find... Let's see, she gives on this, she recites one particular poem. She's like, I appreciate the message, but as with Gil, the imagery is lacking. What does it look like to grow goodness, or smell like, or sound like, or feel like or taste like. I want poetry that encourages me to grow by offering me a different way to imagine growth. What is growing? A field of sunflowers or tangled weeds? And is there any sensible reason for "and" to occupy a line of its own in this poem? Okay, so she does agree with me. Okay, and then the short lines in "Where to Find It" are characteristic of Wade's style throughout the book, but her line breaks at times feel choppy.
Yes, it is
unclear if this fragmented style is intentional or not. So, yeah, like she is criticizing Cleo Wade, but she's doing it in a much more like nuanced way, and I have to admit I agree with her on a lot of points. But the funny thing is she, you know, earlier in the article, she like was discussing Nikita Gill's poetry, and she was saying, as with Nikita Gill, the imagery is lacking. But I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I would say Nikita Gill is my favorite of all the Insta poets. Like I have, she is the only of the Instagram poets that I have all of her collections,
and yeah, I would say she uses more imagery than Cleo Wade.
Yeah. So in terms of my perception of this criticism, I actually agree with it a lot. In particular, to Cleo Wade, I just disagree. I'm just very curious and perplexed that how can I be so on point with her about Cleo Wade's poetry, but she seems to lump Nikita Gill in the same category, and I'm just totally not on board with that because Nikita Gill is my absolute favorite and she is so much more sophisticated.
Yeah, I don't really understand that either. But I did agree with everything that she said about Cleo Wade. I'm not a fan of the breaks in the lines, and she doesn't really have too much imagery with her work. So I don't know.
Alrighty then, that's the criticism section of the podcast. And now we will end on a lighter note. We're now going to move to the activity, hashtag InstaPoetry. Yes, do you have your phone ready?
Yep, I have it ready.
Alrighty, so just pull up Instagram, and I would like you to please search the hashtag InstaPoetry. But the important thing is not to just look at the top picks. Go and make sure to click on the recent contributions.
Okay.
So this is part of how I found, like, some of them, you know, some of my poets I found to contribute to this podcast, you know, were from InstaPoet or other anthologies. But another way I found certain poets is I literally did this exercise and I'm like, I like that poet, I want them on my podcast.
So do you want me to read the first one that I come across?
Just look, like, peruse the first few and pick one that speaks to you.
Okay, let me see here. Well, this one's pretty intense. Okay.
Go for it.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Show it to me. I want to see it. I know it's free. You can't taunt me or quit. You said it, you spread it. Like an inbred shit. Admit you are a whore, and you're no more than a floor to be walked on, mocked with nothing to stand for.
Ooh,
so
that is deep.
That is something else. It's it's interesting going from reading this stuff that Cleo Wade has put out and then going to this. It's just...
And you know what's interesting? It's, well, maybe it was just specifically in reference to Heart Talk, but it's funny that Cleo Wade is so politically active with all these, like, racial and societal issues, and yet her poetry is so super fluffy, whereas what I just read you would think would come from a more politically inclined or politically aware poet.
Yeah, that's, the contrast is really, it's really something else. I mean, when I look at this one, I think of all of the possible reasons this person could be writing this. I mean, they have something to stand for, that's for sure. Do you want me to do another one?
No, here, let me find one.
Okay.
All right, here is a short one. You are a stellar rain in a dark blue sky. You're the galaxy girl I've been longing for. She's star material.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it is cute. And in a way, it kind of reminds me of Nikita Gill, because Nikita Gill is huge on imagery based off astronomy.
Yeah, she uses a lot of celestial
imagery. Yeah, so this person who wrote this, it's called 100 Grams of Stars, and she's in Iceland, and they're in Iceland, let me see. And they have 387 followers, and I'm going to become the 388th. All righty, then, would you like to share another poem you found?
Sure. So, let me see. This one is called Soul Drifting Throughout Time.
Okay.
And the poet's name is Star Dusted Soul. And let me see here. She's a stargazer, a mystifying sight. She feels the power of the universe. Lift her upon a flight. Soul drifting throughout the night. She's a daydreamer, an explorer of the mind. She feels the heartbeat of the earth. Energize her back alive. Soul drifting throughout time.
Yay! Again, that appeals to all my pagan sensibilities of natural imagery.
I thought that was...
And celestial imagery as well.
I thought it was beautiful.
Yes, that is definitely the stuff I eat up.
And I really like the... When I'm looking at it, I like the form of it. Like, I like where her breaks are, and it's really nice. I followed her.
Yeah, okay, wonderful. So here's one I found. The poet's name is Supernatural Huntress, and it's called Never, the poem. You can build your walls high around that city in your chest, and though you may never call my name when you need a hero to save it, I will not sleep until I know your heart is safe and all your tears are ones of joy, because that's what heroes do. Oh, that was sweet. I really liked that one.
I actually read along with that one as you read it. And I like the way that this post looks.
Yeah, like the kind of angled.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm especially like that city in your chest. Again, like just, you know, the fact that there's a fortress around one's heart or one's emotions, if you will.
Yeah, it's kind of fun thinking about there being a city in your chest and like there being this whole other world and dimension. And that, I like that a lot.
Yep.
I'm going to follow her too.
Yes. I'm going to follow her too. So why don't you read one more for us?
Okay, let me see here. Okay, so this one is called The Child.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like the contributor here, his name is Ollie's Drama Corner.
Yes, I see it. I'll follow
along. Let me see here. Okay. Or no, I'm sorry. It's she. She's Ollie's Drama Corner. Okay. You think you know, you think you care, as true as it may be. You're not there to see. I know how it feels. I know how it's been. Be damn sure I know. Mr. Know-It-All. So old and wise. While I'm just a child, lost in the wild, lost in the dark. Watch the child, so little and young, naive and blunt. I'm not just your child. Please open your mind. You may understand this child can be wild or lost, but in charge. Don't push me down, 'cause I won't take it. I know what to do, no need to unsettle. Give me a chance. I can be smart, I can be bright. I know that. I can.
And it seems her real name is Olivia. Yeah. I liked that.
Because Olivia Beach.
Yeah, I like that because I think there is this tendency of adults to underestimate children's intelligence and children's perceptions. Like, and well, you know, of course, their brains are not fully finished developing. Neurologically speaking, they're not dumb.
Yeah.
And we so often try to infantilize them, and no, it's like, no, what they have to say can be important.
It's such a unique concept, too, to write about. It's not something that you see, like, we see tons of poems about, you know, romance and broken hearts, but this is just so different. I think that's why I was drawn to it.
I don't know. I would dispute that because I would think a lot of Insta poetry is about childhood traumas. And, you know, this definitely made me think of, you know, how how a child may feel helpless in an abusive situation, or just, if not an abusive, just, you know, dysfunctional situation.
I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm. But either way, she was able to present the idea in a way that was, you know, unique and nice to hear on the ear. So, yeah, let's see. 89 followers, I'm going to become the 90th.
Yep, I just followed her too.
Okay. Alrighty then. And that concludes this episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Tune in next time as we tackle another Insta Poetry giant with another poet. Bye!